You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is a very special guest. It's Oliver Raymond Paredes, better known as Ollie Raymond Paredes, and he is a graduate of Texas Western University. In fact, he was the first graduate in the communication department here at Texas Western, and he's the first UTEP minor to ever have a network show. Also, he was on the radio at Saturday Night at the Chase from 1951 to 1959. So we're very honored to have Ollie Paredes with us today, and he's going to chat, and I tell you, this man has a lot of stories to tell us, and we're very pleased that he was able to join us. Ollie, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you very much, Lou. And first of all, if the IRS is listening, I'm not really here. I've sent in a substitute. I know I owe back taxes, but I'll get around to them one of these days.
I didn't know they were taxing your back now, but I'm going to have to pay a lot of that. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's delighted to be at the old home grounds, and I was just telling you that all of the things that I have ever been started right here at College of Mines, and now UTEP, according then to Texas Western, then UTEP. And I certainly owe this school an awful lot.
Now, it's obvious, I think, when people who meet you, you're very animated, you're a good storyteller, so you're perfect for broadcasting. But what made you decide to major in communication? Have you always been interested in this since you were a little boy?
When I was in the Navy, Lou, I had to do a lot of stuff. I was a band leader in the Navy, too, for instance. I was in the NATTC, and I was made the leader of the Hi-Hatters. And we had to broadcast locally wherever we happened to be. For instance, we were in Minneapolis, Minnesota, so I had to broadcast locally there, or somebody did, and so they selected me to do the broadcast. And then we went to Gainesville, Georgia, the same thing. I was broadcasting for my band, and we would present little Navy programs. And then I went down in Stuart, Florida, the same thing. So I got interested in broadcasting that way. Found out that, College of Mines at that time was offering a broadcast course with Virgil Hicks, who started the whole department. And I thought, well, that's the thing to do. So I decided that I'd better do something a little more solid, because I had a baby coming on the way, and I wasn't really making all that money, even though we played some pretty good spots. But I decided to come back and get something solid that I could bank on, and the broadcast communications was being offered here. So I latched on to it, took my whole course of study in 2 years, got all my major work done with the exception of two courses, and I finally went to the Midwest to try to get a job. The first job I even applied for, I had made my recording audition on my, that remember that wax things that we used to
acetate.
Make? Broadcast mm-hmm. a transcription at KEPO where I was working. I made my own audition record, sent it ahead of myself to KMOX then in St. Louis, and dadgum, I got the job. So my first job lasted 37 years. So I was with CBS in different capacities in Chicago, St. Louis, Hollywood, and then back to St. Louis for 37 years.
Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, that you hosted a show Saturday Night at the Chase for CBS Radio. And in those years, CBS was very strong. CBS and NBC, but CBS, because of the shows they had like Gunsmoke and, a lot of the other shows that were on radio, very strong. So you had the opportunity to work with a lot of these big names.
Almost every big name at the time, Lou, I worked with. I worked with Jonathan Winters, for instance, that comes to mind, the Ames brothers, Andy Williams, you name the star, I worked with him. Very, very happily. I had so many good years. That was a half-hour broadcast. And then after the show, of course, I would sit with him and have an adult beverage with him, and just enjoyed myself for 9 years. Plus the fact that I had my band on the first network broadcast for graduate of UTEP or graduate of Texas Western. This is what happened. I was doing what we called remote broadcast. We would go to different hotels, and they had bands in those years. And you do a pickup for the network, Well, this one guy by the name of Jimmy McPartland was sick, and I was scheduled to do the remote announcing for that program. So the owner of the hotel, who knew that I played trumpet, said, Ollie, you got to bring your trumpet. My band leader is sick. You've got to take over his band. I said, I can't take over another man's band. I don't know the music. He said, I know you can do it. You've got to do it, because otherwise I won't have a broadcast tonight. So I got my horn, went over there, took over the guy's band, did it successfully somehow, finished out the 2 weeks for him, you know, successfully. So the first time that an announcer had ever become the trumpet player leader of a band that he had never seen before or heard before.
A lot of times people are not aware the fact that announcers played a big, big role in radio, early golden age of radio. That's basically all they did. They would announce the show, sometimes read the commercials. So tell us a little bit about your role as an announcer and a master of ceremonies.
Well, the once again, as you said, very rightly so, the staff announcer was the guy that had to fill in for whoever didn't show up, you know. And so many times somebody would get sick who was outside of the broadcast media that might have a program. And you'd have to sit in there and do the show for him. You had to listen to the show, know what the show was about, and then step in there. Oh, yes, I did many of those. And like I was telling you about that broadcast, the uniqueness of this particular institution in getting me ready for music or announcing, I could step in and take over the band leader's role plus the announcer's role on the same show for the next 2 weeks, you know.
Fantastic. Tell me, because as we mentioned earlier, you're one of the first graduates from Texas Western Broadcasting, and the fact that you went on to work in radio, it's not polite to ask a lady her age, but a gentleman, I think it's okay. Do you mind telling us how old you are, Ollie?
Oh, no, not at all. I call myself possibly the world's oldest country and western singer, 90 years old.
90 years young, and of course, as you mentioned earlier, working in radio. So tell us a little bit about what are your thoughts on all these changes that the media has gone through? And did you ever imagine that you would be able to listen to the radio on a computer, on a phone, and some of the things that have just come on?
It's just almost Buck Rogers-ish. I guess that's the way to put it, because Buck Rogers was the man of the future, and he traveled in spaceships, and he had a anti-gravity belt that he would fly around in. And I envisioned that one of these days, radio would be that kind of a thing. And so I wanted to be a part of that. When I was in the Navy, just before I got out, I almost stayed in the Navy because I was assigned to guard a big wing we had in Jacksonville, Florida. And in that was the jet plane that I had never seen before. Jet planes. And I started imagining myself going to the moon and everything else. But broadcasting, of course, was done by a little handset on your arm. That's the way that those guys used to communicate with each other. So I envisioned that. I didn't envision the internet, because that was just way beyond. But I figured that radio and television would finally be a local kind of a do-it-yourself kind of a thing. And I was right. It has become that. But the strides forward so fast is almost unbelievable.
Well, one of the things that early radio dramas used to focus on, westerns, of course, their number one was Gunsmoke, because that's what they wanted. CBS wanted an adult western, not the Lone Ranger or anything like that. But they also had a lot of interest in private detectives, Philip Marlowe and
Guns. Remember Dragnet?
Dragnet, bom, yes.
Bom, bom, bom.
And he went on to a very successful career on television as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now we're seeing audiobooks. And audiobooks are no longer just read. Mm-hmm. They're dramatized. And one of the narrators mentioned that it's almost like old-time radio coming back.
That's right. That's another feel for a broadcaster, because audiobooks, for the blind, my gosh, they're a must. And a guy with a good voice and with a sense of drama can really make those books come to life. And I used to, for instance, when I was in Chicago, I did a program called The Gold Coast Show, where I had to do three voices a day, 5 days a week, three different voices. And so I'd do a voice like this.
Or I'd do a voice like this.
Or I'd do my regular voice. Or I would go and do a Frenchman voice. Yes, I love you, my darling. You are so beautiful. And I would do accents and the whole ball of wax. But back in those days, we had so many opportunities to do that kind of thing. But the audio book And the audio internet, I think, will give us the same kind of thing, because radio dramatic acting with just your voice creating the picture is really a major strong force for the entertainment world. It's still to be exploited.
As far as what you do, do you have grandchildren?
Say that again?
Do you have grandchildren?
Oh, yes, I certainly.
Grandpa must really keep them entertained.
Well, I was pretty good at that. My grandson, incidentally, had just, 2 years ago, graduated from the Berklee School of Music, and he took as his major motion picture musical themes and motion picture musical background. Now, you talk about a selective service, selective study, and I think I was influential in, doing what I've done through the years in that regard.
Well, when your children or your grandchildren ask you, Grandpa, can you read us a story? I'm sure that they're very entertained.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've always been. Of course, when I was doing the weather out in Hollywood, that's where my daughter lived. I was doing the weather, and of course, one time I had the idea to do the weather at the Ringling and Brother Barnum and Bailey winter home. And the idea struck me, if I could put my national map on an elephant, and have clowns dropping snow, or at least cut pieces of paper as snow, and then the rain with a hose, on the elephant, I might have a very entertaining weather forecast. So I did that. And boy, it really caused some stir, because it was kind of a new idea to have an elephant be the national map and the weather that I had be provided by the clowns on top of the elephant.
I don't mean this in a bad way or anything like that, but I see a lot of you in me. As Norma said, in 2 or 3 decades, I may be you, although I'm not as energetic as you. What's your secret?
Well, I have no secret except that I drink a little adult beverage yet, a little, shall we say, juice of the grape at night. And my wife is 96. Oh, yes. So we're really up there. And all I can tell you as far as my skin is concerned, and I don't want to put a plug in for my daughter, but she has her own cosmetics business in Dallas, and she makes some of the world's finest cosmetics. And I use them, and you can tell that my skin
No
wrinkles at all. No. And it's always been very, very, and my wife's the same way. Even though she's 96, her skin is very nice and smooth, youthful appearance, and is just doing a marvelous job.
As we wrap up here, Ollie, what brought you back to El Paso? Did you come back to visit, or did you come to celebrate, you said, El Paso High Centennial?
Well, kind of everything, plus the fact that I have just written and recorded a new CD. I call it my metaphor to the Washington deceivers who have been lying to us for the last 60 years. I'm sick to death, so this is my protest song, and it's called You Believed My Lies. It's a song about a guy that has said, I told you that I loved you, yes, and you told me about a marriage and a fancy honeymoon and so on and so forth. And then at the end he says, and I'm sorry, I'm so sorry that you believed my lies.
Well, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. It's been a joy chatting with you and having a conversation. We've been visiting with Oliver Rayman Paredes, who was one of the first graduates of the Texas Western Broadcasting School Department here on campus. And he is also, as he mentioned, he just recorded a CD, and it's called You Believe My Lies. And people might wonder, can they go on YouTube and watch some of the shows like Saturday at the Chase?
We've got a St. Louis Hall of Fame organization that does kind of get that kind of stuff. And I've got a couple of the things that I did, but I haven't really.
But you do have a Facebook page, you said, right?
Oh, yeah, I've got a Facebook page. And I've also, you can hear my song at Work Zone, WORK, that's the band's name, workzone.bandcamp.com.
Well, I told you. Yes, I told you that you were number one. I love to see the light that filled your eyes. You spoke of a wedding and a fancy honeymoon. I hope you noted I made no reply, 'cause all is fair in love. wise men say, and some dudes will use any fib just to have their way. You're hurting, yes, you're hurting. No need to analyze. I see it in your face and in your eyes.
That again is workzone.bandcamp.com. Again, we would like to thank Ali Raymond Paredes for being with us here today. And we'd like to thank also our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Luis Sainz.